From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a very, very good afternoon to you. And I've got a confession to make. Hi, 101.9. It's Kate Turkington, of course, because it's 12 o'clock on a Sunday. But as you listen to this, I am going to be in a tent in the middle of the crew. I'm either mad, I'm either brilliantly courageous, or whatever. And there are snowstorms at the moment. But I'll tell you all when, if I survive, about it next week. But Kate is in a tent in the middle of the crew in a snowstorm. But enough of me. I want to tell you, because some of you have been asking me about Bob the Turtle. Do you remember the story we interviewed Helen Lockhart, who's with the Two Oceans Aquarium in Cape Town? Fascinating interview, wonderful place to visit. And she told us the tale of Bob the Turtle. And you may remember, Bob the Turtle had been in the aquarium for 8 years. They patched him up, took a long time, took 8 years, and they finally released him. And they've got a little tracking device on him, so they've been keeping count of where he is for, in fact, the last, how many days? 158 days. It's about 3 months, isn't it? My maths isn't great. Well, the first thing is, they found out that Bob isn't a Bob. It's a her. So I don't think they've changed her name, but actually it's a lady turtle. Since they released her 158 days ago, she's travelled nearly 7,000 kilometres. This turtle, she's not all that big. She's not a big leatherback turtle. The water depth she's been into, she's been as deep as 5,000 metres, or maybe the depth of the water she's been in. And the nearest town she's been to is Hermanus. So she's cruising mainly the surface currents of the southern Atlantic Ocean. So, yes, the ocean is 5,000 metres deep where Bob is currently swimming, and the water temperature is cool, not that bad, 16.5 centigrade. Yes, it is 3 months since she's been going in sort of loops. Her favourite shape seems to be a circle. She's going in loops round the Atlantic surface current. So isn't that amazing? 8 years in an aquarium, and there we have Bobby, they haven't changed her name, doing really, really well, swimming the great ocean, one of the great oceans of the world. And they had other turtles they released, but we can't follow them all. But they're also doing very, very well. Okay, after the break, we're going to go to the Eastern Cape, where I am at this very moment, just to remind you of some of the wonderful things you can do and see there.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It's Travels with Kate Turkington, and it's Sunday. And I want to remind you, because I'm sure many of you already love the Eastern Cape and know it well, but I want to remind you of some of the places that we can travel to in the Eastern Cape, given that air flights at the moment are so exorbitant to go anywhere overseas. So let's bring it home. And as you know, it's now almost a couple of weeks ago that South Africa was named by the Daily Telegraph and its readers as their number one favourite destination, travel destination in the world. Okay, why do we want to go to the Eastern Cape. Just some headlines to begin with before I go into in detail. First of all, of course, the wildlife. I mean, there's a huge range of game in the Eastern Cape. There are game reserves. I'll talk about some of them in a moment. And, of course, a very, very important point, not only for us, but for international visitors, the Eastern Cape is malaria-free. And if you do, having been in hospital with malaria myself, and my late husband at one stage contracting cerebral malaria in the bush, if you do go to the low veld and it is malaria season, which is basically summer, spring, autumn, always take your anti-malarials, always take your anti-malarials. But Eastern Cape, malaria free. Of course, you can dive literally on the wild side, not only are the wonderful beaches, wonderful snorkeling, diving opportunities. I have never yet done this. I might put it on my bucket ball, but you can dive with a bait ball. You know, bait ball is when the fish all swim very, very tightly together. And then you have that amazing sardine run, which is not only in KZN, you also get it in the Eastern Cape along the wild coast. And then you get whales, you get humpbacks, you get sharks, you get birds, seabirds galore. And then, you know, I'm giving you headlines at the moment, but look at the culture and the history of the Eastern Cape. You've got from rustic villages to colonial mansions. I mean, the cultural heritage there is amazing. It comes in many, many different forms. And then, of course, lots you can do yourself. You can cycle, you can go on foot, you can go by horse, you can go by vehicle, preferably a CRV or a 4x4 if you're going into quite a wild part. And maybe you've never heard of somewhere called Bulungula. Bulungula. I visited there once. It's a village, a local village, which welcomes locals to it. It's got the most wonderful beach. The community runs the place. There's excellent food. There's all kinds of water sports, simple, rustic accommodation. And if you do go there, just don't take my word for it. Have a look on TripAdvisor or somewhere and you see the rave reviews that Bulungula has. And you might remember, I think it was last week, we talked to Manny de Freitas, the DA, Shadow Minister of Tourism, and he was promoting the idea of homestays, where you go and stay with a family. Well, Bulungula isn't homestays. I mean, they do have cabins, etc., but it is a chance to really interact with the local community, who are delightful, friendly, full of knowledge, the best place to snorkel, here's where grandma died, or whatever. So, Google it, Bulungula, Bulungula. And then, of course, the hikes. I've done a couple of the hikes, the most memorable one being a few years ago, that Wild Coast Meander. It's a 54-kilometer trail, goes over 6 days and 5 nights. And in the evening, at night, you stay at the little hotels, the little Wild Coast hotels. So the Cobb Inn or Mazeppa Bay, Wavecrest, Trenery's, and you actually end up at Morgan Bay. And I remember, I think it was day three. I can't remember, day two, day three. I did it when I was a lot younger and a lot fitter. I did it when the spring tides were running. And I remember absolutely crawling into Wavecrest after having waded along the beach through waves for what seemed like kilometres with water in my boots and soaked to the skin. I remember crawling into the bar at Wavecrest, much to the amazement of the locals, and saying, please give me a quadruple whiskey. Anyway, I can't remember if I had the quadruple whiskey. I certainly had a whiskey, took a painkiller and woke up the next morning as bright as a button, but all kinds of wonderful hikes in the Eastern Cape. And of course, Gqeberha, formerly Port Elizabeth, biggest city in the Eastern Cape. There's a tour I did about 5, 6, 7 years ago. It's called the Route 67, Route, if you're American or Canadian, Route 67 walking tour. And why 67? Because it celebrates 67 years of Mandela's political life. So there are 67 public artworks, all created by Eastern Cape artists. So there are sculptures, mosaics, posters, friezes, the biggest South African flag in South Africa. And it starts at the Campanile, the bell tower, and then you climb up the staircase to the Market Square in the center of the city. And you can stop and have a drink en route. You can stop and have a bag of slap chips on the route. You can stop and admire the artworks. Lovely thing to do. I did it with fairly young children. I think they were about 10-ish, 8, 10, 12-ish, and they loved it because also you can stand in the queue to vote. They're all metalworks, and you end up holding the hand of a huge figure of Mandela in metalworks. So a really nice thing to do if you're down there, the Route 67. And then, of course, all the holiday places like Cape St. Francis. And then getting back to the game, Addo Elephant Park, you're guaranteed to see huge herds of elephants in Addo Elephant Park. And something you may not even know about called the flightless dung beetle. I think I'm right in saying, I didn't check this, the only flightless dung beetle in the world is to be found in Addo Elephant Park. And there are notices all the way along, especially during the breeding, whatever, mating season of the flightless dung beetle, which I don't know when it is. There are notices all along the road. Drive very carefully. Don't go and take out a critically endangered flightless dung beetle. So, interesting place to go. Then Graaffreinet, of course, lovely, lovely part of the Eastern Cape. It's the fourth oldest town in South Africa, often referred to by cliche travel writers as the gem of the Karoo. It's got historical landmarks, it's got old buildings, it's got that iconic, I suppose, Dutch Reformed church, which apparently is the fourth oldest church in South Africa. And there's Cape Dutch, there's Victorian, there's Georgian architecture. And if you've got time when you're in Graaffreinet, go into the Rennet House Museum. Lovely little museum. Got antiques, it's got artifacts from the town's past. And another interesting little museum, the Old Residency Museum, which is, you know, takes you, I suppose, into the lives of some of the early settlers in the region. And of course, right by Graaffreinet, I'm not quite there at the moment, but nearly there, the Valley of Desolation. It's one of Graaffreinet's most famous attractions. It's, I suppose one can only call it a geological wonder. It's in the nearby Kamdaboo National Park, and wonderful views of the plains and those dolerite pillars that sort of rise up dramatically from the earth. If you watch a sunset from the Valley of Desolation, you won't forget it, ever.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
You're traveling with Kate Turkington on 101.9 High FM, and today we're traveling, for me, literally, in the middle of the Eastern Cape. And I'm just reminding you of some of the amazing places you can visit in the Eastern Cape. We talked about Rafrenet. We talked about the Valley of Desolation. What about New Bethesda, that little town, still no lights in New Bethesda. Mind you, not many of us do have lights all the time at the moment, but that has no lights all of the time. It's a little tiny, remote little village with the mountains all around it. Amazing little historic houses. You drive north of Rafrenet, and then you meet that Karoo landscape, that semi-arid Karoo landscape, those rugged mountains, the plains that stretch forever. The crisp, clean air, if you're not breathing in snowflakes, to stars. I love the Karoo. I love the Karoo. But New Bethesda, I suppose really it's earned its reputation as being a centre of creativity. And it became famous, I'm sure you remember, largely because of the Owl House, the enigmatic Owl House. That was where the late artist Helen Martins lived. And I was trying to remember, many moons ago, I saw one of Athol Fugard's place. Is it the road to Mecca? Somebody must remind me. By the way, you can get hold of me at kate@kateturkington.com or kate@hi.co.za. Remember that hi is C-H-A-I, kate@hi.co.za. I think the play was The Road to Mecca by Athol Fugard, and I saw it many, many moons ago with a very famous Afrikaans actress in the role at the Grahamstown Festival, as it was then. And the Owl House, well, I mean, the whole thing is like a very surreal art installation. You've got those strange sculptures, you've got the concrete figures with embedded glass pieces in them. And when the sun comes out and the sun catches those little glass pieces in the sculptures, you get like an amazing kaleidoscope of colours. And then the Camel Yard, named because of the camel sculptures there, all created by Koos Malgas, to a local farm labourer. I mean, it is an incredible little place to be there in the middle of a semi-arid desert. So if you've never been to New Bethesda, visit there when you've got time. And right above New Bethesda, you've got the tallest mountain, or certainly the highest peak in the Eastern Cape, and that's the Compassberg. And if you're fit and adventurous, you can do a very challenging hike to the summit, and you'll be rewarded with amazing views when you do get there. And don't forget the Karoo, amazing food, all those poiki kosses and the homemade breads and the cheeses. And I don't know if malva pudding and milk come from the Karoo, but you can certainly get there. Karoo lamb, of course. And of course, see, I always feel a bit sorry for the Karoo sheep, because they season themselves as they go. While they're still alive, they're nibbling all those succulents and all those herbs. So by the time you cook the Karoo lamb, which I must say I never have, not being a cook, it's beautifully seasoned already. So really a great place to go. And also, if you're in the Karoo and in that area, lots of local arts and crafts, lovely handcrafted things you can buy to take home, like pottery and textiles and artwork. And you may remember, if you've been listening to the program over the months, I interviewed Julie Dutoy. She and her husband, Chris Murray, they're like the king and queen of the Karoo, and they published 4 books, all stories, legends, myths about the Karoo and its many inhabitants. So that's something for you to look at. So next week I'll be telling you even more about where I'm staying at the moment, which is a very, very big game reserve, Karoo Reserve, Natural Reserve, called Samara. And just finally about the Eastern Cape, before we stop talking about, let's come back to that wild coast. I don't know if you've ever been to the wild coast, but if you're looking for unspoiled wilderness, if you're looking for, I believe, the most beautiful beaches in South Africa, that's where you're head. And let me tell you, unlike the Cape Town beaches, if you find somebody on a beach in the Wild Coast, you actually get up and go to the next beach where you probably won't find anybody. Okay, maybe during the December holidays you will. You'll find cows. I mean, the famous Wild Coast Mombies are on the beaches all along the Wild Coast, but totally, totally unspoiled, beautiful, sandy beaches and all kinds of accommodation, little tiny hotels, guest houses, local houses that have been there for ever and ever and ever. So apparently, I'm not quite sure what the situation is now, but I think there's been a recent decision to allow Shell to conduct tests off that coastline. Not quite sure what's happened. I know there have been very vociferous protests from the locals and from conservation groups. Not quite sure what's happening at the moment. But of course, because there's little or no infrastructure, that's why you've got those beautiful, unspoiled beaches there. It's mild weather most of the year round. That's another good reason to go. And also, it's a great place to discover the local quarter culture. I mean, those little traditional thatched rondavels. And I say you can do hikes and trails all the way along that coast. So whether you want to be a beach bum, whether you want adventure, there's adventure stuff to do along there, or a very, very laid-back way. And don't forget, I mentioned that Bulungula. To call it a resort is to misname it, because you immediately think resort, and it's just a beautiful community-led, beautifully run village where you'll stay in very nice accommodations. All the water sports are laid on. Your food is laid on. I know somebody who went there for 3 days and stayed for 12, but he did have the time to do that. And of Coffee Bay, too. You get the real spirit of the Wild Coast. And the family hotels, the campsites, the backpacker resorts, they're all there. And finally, when I did that hike, as I was telling you, I ended up at Morgan's Bay, which I'd never been to before, which again was a very interesting little place to go to. So there you are. If your pockets aren't too deep at the moment and you're not thinking of going overseas at all, think about the Eastern Cape, lots to do, and it's home after all.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. Joining me now, I think, one of South Africa's most fascinating authors. Prof. Ryan Blumenthal is one of South Africa's leading forensic pathologists. And you may remember, he became famous with the publication of his first book, which was called Life in the Trenches with a Forensic Pathologist in Africa. And you may remember, too, it became a non-fiction bestseller, and also spawned an 8-part television documentary on DSTV. Anyway, he's with us today, got a fascinating new book called Risking Life for Death, Lessons from the Autopsy Table, published by Jonathan Ball. So welcome, Prof. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
An honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Now, just going back a bit, did you expect that huge popular response from that first book of yours?
To be honest with you, I was very surprised that it resonated with so many people and the response from the book. Still today, it's surprising. It's still alive. I still get messages from all over the place, people sending me selfies, essays, people wanting to meet me for coffee. I get career advice. It's been unbelievable.
Well, it's such a fascinating book. Now, your new book, you base on something called Locard's exchange principle. And you know, once an English teacher, always an English teacher, so I'm going to spell Locard for the listeners. L-O-C-H-A-R-D, Locard's exchange principle or contact theory. So first of all, Prof, what is that?
Well, as a forensic pathologist and forensic scientist, we use this principle every single day. We eat, breathe, sleep, dream this principle. This is our bread and butter. It was first proclaimed in 1643 by Professor Edmond Locard from France. And in one sentence, every contact leaves a trace. If you go to a crime scene, you will leave something there and you'll take something with it. And this is the whole basis of how we catch murderers. So I thought to myself, because it's so pervasive, I mean, you really can trace and track anything, that this can actually be applied to our lives. I mean, it's the basis of everything. You cannot believe how much stuff gets interchanged in our lives. It's why we get sick. It's why we die. It's how we get ideas. It's why it can even be a theory for happiness, and it can even provide you with a philosophy for growing older better.
Well, I'm going to come to that a bit later on, but I want to talk about some of the case stories, some of the case histories in your book, because you give practical examples from your work. Two are particularly like, can you tell us about the peanut butter case?
All right. So, look, this book was hard work. It was discipline, and there was a lot of sacrifice writing this book. There's lots of case studies in this book. It's from 20 years in the field, which I've compiled. And then there's, as a golden thread, Locard's exchange principle running through, and it culminates in this epilogue, which is life changing, I believe. So in my book, I describe a death scene where we find someone dead on the floor in the kitchen. And after a thorough scene examination, there was an open jar of peanut butter, smooth, not crunchy. So, you know, we as medical detectives, we have to think about everything. So the first thing that went through my mind is, could this be an anaphylactic reaction to peanuts? But then I thought, wait a minute, if he knows that he's allergic, why would he be eating peanut butter? So there goes that theory. Anyway, after having done the autopsy, I found what can only be described as a huge glob of peanut butter obstructing his upper airways. And this was the cause of death, as unbelievable as it sounds.
Sure.
And over the years, I've seen people choke on many things. I've seen sushi, meat, a lot from dry bread. I had a homeless person breathe in plastic and asphyxiate. I've seen, teeth and gauze in dentists. I've seen people die from that in the upper airways. So Anyway, there's an entire chapter on this in the new book.
And another, and I must tell you, I'm an avid crime fiction junkie. So I think from about the age of 12, which is going back a very, very long way, I read my Agatha Christie, I read crime fiction. And of course, all detectives, whether it's Hercule Poirot, whether it's Miss Marple, whether it's any of the famous, whether it's Philip Marlowe in America, they all base their research on Locard's principle. The murderer leaves something behind and takes something away, however infinitesimal it might be. Now, what about Prof before DNA?
Well, so, I mean, I recently was at a conference in Cape Town where I discussed this very matter, a very famous case called the Rachel Nichol case, which was from Britain, where Rachel Nichol was stabbed and murdered, and they wrongfully convicted the wrong person. And then many years later, DNA was invented, and then they could find the real killer. So, and the future holds many exciting possibilities with new technologies. So that's why we've got this mindset in forensics that we want to, you know, save important evidence, because you never know what's going to be used later. But just to get back to Locard's exchange principle, because the premise of my book is it goes beyond murder. I mean, this extends to every single aspect of your life, from your accent to genocides, to basic science, to your hay fever. All of it follows Locard's exchange principle. If we want to get to the truth of something, we can trace and track it back to origin via Locard's exchange principle. This is the entire premise of the book. Your idea, your ideology, you know, I'm saying that not everyone may be that smart to have come up with this themselves, and you can trace and track it back to an origin.
Oh, definitely. As I say, I'm going to come to the specific ones you talk about just a little bit further on. But I'd like to ask you, you know, it's been a while now since we've, touch wood, got over the pandemic. But what changes did you see, Prof, as a result of COVID? Did it change your work at all?
Look, I can only discuss it from a forensic pathology point of view. I'm not an immunologist, so I can't go into vaccines, etc. But from my own time in the mortuary, I worked throughout the pandemic as an essential worker, and I saw five trends from my autopsy table. Now, from my autopsy table, I can tell you a lot of what's happening in the world without even going outdoors. You know, we can tell you if a new gang has moved into a neighborhood, if there's a new and emergent drug or disease. We can even tell you the health of the nation just from the autopsy table, because the body speaketh with miraculous tongue. So during COVID pandemic, I started seeing some trends. Obviously, there was lockdown restrictions, and I was seeing, for example, an increase in suicides. The youngest I had on my table was 7 years old from hanging. Hanging was the way to go.
No.
Then I started seeing an increase in interpersonal violence, because there was nowhere to run and hide, and partners came face to face with themselves during this pandemic. Then I started seeing an increase in addict-related deaths, because people were not getting their fixes. So they weren't getting their alcohol or their drugs. So there was this whole underground alcohol brewing market happening, and people, they may think they know about how to brew their own alcohol at home. Meanwhile, we were seeing a lot of deaths from that, from methanol poisoning, etc. And also they were getting impure drugs that they were using. So I was seeing an increase in addict-related deaths. The fourth thing, for some unknown reason, as we were coming out of these little waves, we were seeing an increase in road traffic fatalities. So people seemed to have forgotten how to drive during the pandemic, or their confidence went down, or road rage increased. We don't know what. But as we were coming out of these peaks, there was an increase in road traffic fatalities. And the last, and I think the most damning of all the things that I was seeing, was an increase in skeletons and decomposed bodies, because no one was finding all these lonely people in their flats, in their apartments, in the fields. So we were doing a lot of decomps and skeletons in coming out of the waves.
So I'm talking to Prof. Ryan Blumenthal about his new book, Risking Life for Death. Prof deals with dead bodies. You're a forensic pathologist. And you're saying, and I believe you, and after reading the book, how much you can tell from a dead body, almost more in a way than a living one. What part, if any, do hunches or intuition play? Any at all?
Look, I'm a scientist when all is said and done. We try and keep this as scientific as possible. And, you know, if someone's lying on my table, you know, like I would say to my technical assistant, you know, this person made bad choices in life because every contact leaves a trace. This is what Locard's principle is about. I mean, it reads to me like a roadmap on their face and on their body. You know, you can see the scars. You can see needle puncture marks. You can see signs of alcoholism. You can see signs of smoking. To me, this is so blatant. Like, it just almost screams at me. So every contact leaves a trace. Your choices you make in life will determine who you are. It can also constrain who you're going to be. It will determine your happiness, your health, and a philosophy for growing older.
Well, now let's come back to that, because you're saying in your book that if we were to all think like medical detectives, your term for a forensic pathologist, we could improve our lives, we could be happier human beings. And you talk us through the three battlefronts of life, you call them, relationship, work, and health. So can we talk through those one at a time? First of all, relationship. You talk about very impractical ideas of love, for example.
Okay, I need to contextualize this. So as a forensic pathologist, I get to read many suicide notes. I've read hundreds of suicide notes over the years. And I know this sounds out of place, perhaps a little arrogant, but if you want to talk to happiness, you must speak to a forensic pathologist, not a psychiatrist, because we get to read the suicide notes. They don't get to read the suicide notes. And suicide notes represent very clear messages to the living. And after having read hundreds of suicide notes, with my pattern analysis, I determined that there's only three main themes why people kill themselves. And these three themes are work issues, health issues, relationship issues. And in my book, I call it the three battlefronts of life. Your work battlefront, your health battlefront, your relationship battlefront. Almost all human stresses can be squeezed into these three battlefronts, from your in-laws to your hay fever, work, health, relationships. And then I say each battlefront should be attacked with the same intensity as you do your other battlefronts, and keep Locard's principle in mind. So in your work life, keep in mind your context, in your relationships, your context, and your health, your context. And my argument is that by doing so, you should be happier and grow old better. And we will see less work.
And now talk me through relationships, how what we leave, what we give, your views on that.
Okay, so relationships from a Locard's exchange principle comes down to contacts. So firstly, beware isolation. You know, if you are living in the vault of your own mind, you've got to open those windows and doors. Instead of building walls around yourself, you should build bridges to other people. Who you come in contact with will determine your happiness. You should have contact with healthier, wiser, happier people. If you're the brightest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So make an exerted effort to have contact with better, healthier, happier people. That's the first thing I say.
And if I can come in here, I think how crucial that is, because my own personal term for it is energy vampires. Somebody who will suck the energy and the positivity out of you and go off and leave you shattered. And there's so much doom and gloom around at the moment. It's crucial, as you say, we think positively and we keep up with our positive friends.
Well, it's contact theory. So you've got to make contacts with people. So phone up a lonesome person. Send a cheering message to the shy, the introverted, the wallflowers, you know, you can infect them and they can infect you. And it's all contact theory. So, and then look, low cards is a two-edged sword because you can save your relationship with low cards principle and you can jeopardize your relationship with low cards exchange principle. So, for example, if you, on your partner you find perfume or aftershave, I mean, that could mean that they're having an affair because every contact leaves a trace. Yet you can use low cards exchange principle to spice up your relationship. Because if you have such an insight into the law of interchange, you can have an insight into your partner. You may find out, you know, what their likes are or dislikes, and you can make the extra effort and surprise them with the thing that, that brings them, that, that's pleasing to them.
And I know you spend a bit of time discussing in a way the kind of bad or negative influence the media has on people, especially in relationships. It's very idealized Disney view of love, as it were.
Okay, so I've got quite a bit to say about low cards exchange principle and the media and real information and fake information and the difference between real journalism and media. So in my book, I say, look, there's not that much news, actually. There's about 30 minutes news. The rest is just sensationalism. So you should spend about 15 minutes on local news and international news a day. The rest is just drama. If it is that important, I believe someone will tell you before 10 a.m. the next morning. The difference between real news and fake news also follows low cards exchange principle. News is spread via low cards exchange principle. And, yeah, how much news you're exposed to will determine your happiness, you know, and what you are feeding yourself. So every podcast, every tweet, every TikTok video, this is low cards exchange principle. Your ideas, they're not your own. It gets exchanged via memes, etc.
And how often, in fact, do we get? Because I think we South Africans have the most amazing sense of humor. And how often when something really bad has happened, we get a really funny meme, which makes us, which, I mean, we're not denying the seriousness of the subject, but sometimes just to see the very funny side of something is also a kind of amelioration of feeling bad. You know, it cheers us up. Now, what about work? Too much, too little.
Okay, once again, discussing the work battlefront from a low cards exchange point of view. So everyone thinks hard work will kill you. I disagree entirely. I believe that extreme work is rest, you know, because it keeps us busy and out of mischief. So I'm not even going to go there in my book. I say, look, work is good for you. You know, there's the machine of the world and you should work on it. What I do discuss in my book is boredom and leisure time, of which we have too much. And I believe a lot of my forensic cases stem from boredom and no work. So, and in my book, I explain from a low cardian principle point of view about, you know, how to attack this battlefront. So you got to attack it with creative intensity. You got to have a game plan. And because the world's now becoming very mechanized. We've got AI, artificial intelligence, and it's freeing up us humans. We've got more free time than we've ever had in the history of humankind. So what are we doing with these extra years? I mean, as soon as a person retires, they'll potter around the house. And if you do not feed your mind, the unfed mind will feed upon itself, and it will end up with mischief, and then it ends up at me. Forensically. So we want to avoid that. So it's occupational therapy. I say in my book, you should try and work on the machine of the world as long as possible. You know, when you're young, you're a consumer. Then there's the machine of the world. And when you're old, you're a consumer. And I say, try and work on this machine of the world for as long as possible. Even if you're just a little bolt, you know, if you take that bolt out, that machine will crash. So keep working on the machine of the world. You do this by constantly studying. You know, most people get their degrees or diplomas. They never open up a book again, and they coast through life on the knowledge from their teens and 20s. You've got to keep studying. You've got to keep feeding your mind. Learn new languages. Keep have coffee with someone. Discuss series can you watch? How many books can you read? You know, you've got to keep your mind active with the Locardian principle in mind.
I love that. I'm going to dine out on that real little aphorism you just said. The unfed mind feeds upon itself. I think that's most... that's such an amazing... I'm going to dine out on it, Prof. I will quote you. I will quote you as the author. Okay, you all your life you've dealt with dead bodies, but you're certainly one of the wisest people I've talked to in a very, very long time. Would you do it all again?
Look, as I said, it's been hard work, it's been discipline, it's been sacrifice. My own battlefronts, I mean, look, the work battlefronts, I think I'm doing right. I've obviously got to work on my relationships battlefront, myself and my health battlefront, because all this does take its toll. I mean, all this sitting, all this writing, it takes its toll. You know, sitting is the new smoking. And, and no matter who you are, it's those three battlefronts, work, health, relationship. As you succeed in one, the others will drop. So you've got to try and keep balance till the end. I think it's an art. It's a science. It's something that one has to be very mindful about. It's the art and science of living. And be mindful of it. I mean, I think I'm situated in a very privileged spot. I'm in the blind spot of humanity, you know, in my mortuary. And I get to see what's happening without even going outdoors. So, and it's just feedback. I'm just giving you feedback from what I'm seeing. And I hope something comes of this. I think it's quite an insight.
I'm going to say it for you. It's actually brilliant. I think everybody should read this book. I mean, it takes us into your world. It gives us case histories. It's interesting. It's weird. It's amazing. Then that latter part of the book where you're almost giving a prescription, to use a medical term, for being happier in your relationships, in your work, in your health too. Thank you for the book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And all my family and friends are already fighting over it. Thanks so much.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there. And now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Well, that's all for today. We've covered a lot of ground. We've been in, we're in the Eastern Cape. We talked to Professor Ryan Blumenthal. What a fascinating discussion that was about his book, Risking Life for Death, Lessons from the Living for the Autopsy Table. And you must think, how can we learn anything from the dead? The prof came up with, he said you can learn everything from the dead. And he came up with a couple of phrases that I will not forget. He said, The mind unread is going to lead us into trouble. It wasn't quite that. It was a bit more pithily put than that. But his other one, so true, sitting is the new smoking. If you're sitting for hours at a time, not moving your body, it's as bad for you as sitting and smoking probably three or four cigarettes. So we've all got to get off our backsides and move more. That's all for this week. Thanks to Vusi, my controller. Thanks to Harry, my producer. And thanks to all of you for listening. Look after yourselves. Take care. Lots of love, lots of life. And don't forget, don't only take care of yourselves, but take care of others too.